So here, Daksha is criticizing Lord Shiva. Simply because of what he is. Lord Shiva is known as an Avadut. It's expected he'll do uncommon things. So there's no need to criticize a person who's an Avadut. He will do anything and everything. So Lord Shiva's trying, but somehow or another, Daksha is so accustomed to social etiquette that Lord Shiva doesn't really fit in. The things are not going exactly how Daksha really wants him to go. He's the universal figure here. There's all universal leaders here. And so he wants to show good etiquette because he's the host, actually. He's doing the whole thing. So he's in charge of everything. And then this Avadut rolls up. And he just doesn't abide by the so-called rules of etiquette, mundane moral etiquette. So Daksha's a little bit offended here. And so he's criticizing Lord Shiva, but simultaneously he's pointed out that those same words that he uses for criticism can be used as a praise. Most likely this is from Vishwanatha Chakrabarti Thakura's commentaries on the 10th canto, because he's very expert at that. You know, when Shishupala was insulting Lord Krishna, then he twisted all those words around to mean he was glorifying Krishna, actually. So it's a characteristic of Vishwanatha. So most probably in the Vishwanatha's commentary he's put this in. So, yeah, Lord Shiva, he gives shelter to everyone. He can give shelter to anyone. He can give shelter to those who don't have shelter. So there are many living entities in this material world, especially in the lower regions, the Bhutas and the Pretas and things like that, ghosts, subtle beings, not very nice looking people, very, very scary, deformed people. From our angle of vision, when you live in that society, I guess you make distinctions. You know, he's quite nice looking. But nobody gives them shelter, nobody wants them around. The demigods don't want them. The Buddhas in the mode of ignorance. They're outcasts, you know. So nobody wants these kind of living entities around. But Lord Shiva, he gives them all shelter. They can all take shelter of them. So he's the leader of all the hobgoblins and ghosts and etc. like that. So he's very famous as being as a Padita Bhavana. No one else will give shelter to these people. Lord Shiva will give shelter. This is his magnanimity. So it's difficult to understand Shiva Tattva is more difficult to understand than Vishnu Tattva, because he's simultaneously both. He's a mixture. But he's also known as Vaishnava Jataha Shambhu. He's the greatest of all the Vaishnavas, despite of his seemingly unfavorable association. We're advised to associate with saintly persons and avoid non-devotees, but Lord Shiva, his association sometimes is not so saintly. But therefore it's very difficult to understand. There's one devotee, he's worshipping Ganesh, Srila Prabhupada decided. Before he was initiated, so after he was initiated, he asked Prabhupada, I had a deity of Ganesh and I was worshipping it. He was a Western devotee. He said, I didn't know much about it, the elephant god, so I know I was somehow or other doing some worship. But he asked Srila Prabhupada, I was worshipping this deity before I was initiated, can I continue to worship? And Prabhupada said, I can tell you so many things about the demigods. He said, especially Lord Shiva. So many things. He said, but because I criticize the demigods so much, I practically on all my books, every place. I'm always criticizing the demigods, and I can't say anything now. But they do have very important functions and important roles when they're related in relation to Krishna. They're all very, very important personalities. But because today's Hinduism is so mixed up and kitschy, they think all the demigods, they're all the supreme personality of Godhead. So therefore we see how in the Vaishnava line they completely make a great distinction and they avoid the demigod worship. And especially Ramanujacharya, they go really overboard about demigod worship. Someone was telling me they were having a procession, Ramanujas, taking the deity on the palanquin, ecstatic procession. They had their lord, and they were taking him on the palanquin. Suddenly a big rain cloud came around, a big storm. It's like, oh God, we're going to get wet. So there's a Devi temple there. So they all run in the Devi temple mandap, and they put the palanquin on in the temple. So it started pouring with rain. Then all the bhaktas come out, and they stood in the rain. And then the pujari came, why don't you come and sit in the dry? It's pouring down with rain. They said, we're not going in there. It's a Devi temple. We don't take shelter anywhere except out of Krishna's temple. They said, but your lord's here. Well, why can't you come here? He said, he can do what he likes. He's independent. But we're not going to be unchaste to him. We will stay outside. So they're very critical against the demigods. Madhava is much more lenient with demigods, Madhavacharya, because he's an incarnation of Vayu. So they can't really criticize the demigods because he's a... Because Ramanuja is an incarnation of Anantashesh. He's more in the Vishnu category. A kind of expansion from Anantadeva. So anyway, Prabhupada said, there's so much to learn about the demigods. Because it's so misunderstood and mixed up today, then we generally see the Vaishnavas, they don't bother with the demigod worship at all, just direct service to Krishna. So in the Brahma Samhita, it gives the description of how Lord Shiva is the Shiva Tattva. So just as milk is transformed into curd by the actions of acids, but yet the effect curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, milk. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. So here Vishnu becomes Shiva. When he has to destroy the world, Vishnu doesn't touch the material world. So when he has a function like destroying the world, then he assumes the form of Lord Shiva. He transforms himself into a form which he can simultaneously touch the material world. So Lord Shiva deals with the material world. And Yogamaya transforms into Mahamaya. So it's a husband and wife team. And they manage the whole universe. They actually deal with it. They touch it. But simultaneously we understand that Lord Shiva is actually Vishnu Tattva. He's an expansion of Vishnu. He's coming from Vishnu. It's assumed this mixed Tattva. We understand Roma Devi. Yogamaya Devi, in the beginning of creation, she comes and she transforms into Mahamaya. She's Lakshmi then. She's Lakshmi. She's the eternal consort of the Lord. So, to deal with the material world, then Lakshmi Narayan, they transform into Shiva and Parvati. Then they can start to deal with the material world and act in the material world. So it says also the Text 16 of Brahmasmita. Ahankaratmakam vishvam tasmat etat vijayatah. It's the function of Shambhu in relation to the jiva is that this universe enshrining the mundane egoistic principle has originated from Shambhu. So the universe is coming from Shambhu. Lord Shiva actually creates the universe. Generally we see that Brahma creates and Shiva destroys the Vishnu. But in the beginning it's Lord Shiva and they create, they enter into the universe. Vishnu's glance, Vishnu's name, form, pastimes are non-different. So his glance is also non-different. So his glance, along with Rama Devi, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, they come with the glance and then they enter into the Mahatattva, and then they transform themselves into Shambhu and Parvati as the for the creators of the universe. Then after that, then the personalities are again born like Brahma. Then Lord Shiva is again born from the eyebrows of Lord Shiva. So this is the Rudra manifestation. There are 11 Rudras. These are the ones who call the dancing in the graveyards. They all do that. They deal with directly with the material world. So he creates. So here it's saying, what is the function of Shambhu in relation to the jivas? What is our relation to Lord Shiva in the universe? And he says here that this universe, which enshrines the mundane egoistic principle, has originated from Shambhu. So he's originated the universe. He's also the origin of the egoistic principle, the mundane egoistic principle. This ego principle, it mentions here, this is the adulterating principle of Shiva that makes him milk into yogurt. He gives you the chemical analysis here of how milk becomes yogurt, or how it comes. He said, the said adulterating principle is constituted of a combination of the stupefying quality of the deluding energy, the quality of non-plentitude of the marginal potency, and a slight degree of the ecstatic cognitive principle of the plenary spiritual potency. This is what makes the false ego. A combination of the stupefying quality of the deluding energy. It means Maya, she's deluding. So a bit of that, you're deluded. That's the deluding part of your energy. The quality of non-plentitude of the living entity, the marginal potency. We're always in need of something, non-plentitude. We're lacking knowledge. I can only see this far with my eyes, but science tells me there's other things beyond that and beyond that. And even things they cannot see, the atom is beyond that. So we are limited. Non-plentitude. Limited aspect. So that's the first, the quality, the stupefying quality, or the stupid quality of the ignorance. And then there's the inability to act, the non-plentitude. This is the false ego. And a little bit of the ecstatic cognitive principle, which means Haladini Shakti and the Chit Shakti. That's what makes it lively. Otherwise, how are you going to get inspiration from material sense gratification? We're trying to enjoy it. What is that enthusiasm spirit? That's the Haladini Shakti. It becomes perverted. But that is what enthuses us to sense. So these things mixed together, that bit of enthusiasm on the Haladini Shakti, that's the dictation of pleasure seeking. By nature that living it's a pleasure seeking, that is the Aladini potency. A little bit of that, a little bit of this stupefying quality, how we're completely ignorant, and a little bit of the non-plentitude, we're lacking in so many ways. So when the jiva technical, but you can listen to it. So we're talking about who we think we are and how cleverly Krishna's arranged everything. He says that Shambhu fully enshrines the mundane egoistic principle. He's the principle of ego here. In the Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva is offering prayers to Krishna and he's glorifying him, his universal form specifically. How the different features of the universe are Krishna's body. And then he says, as far as I am concerned, I'm your false ego. So just as we have false ego, minute, so the universal form also has a false ego. So that is Lord Shiva. That is Lord Shiva. And from him, that Shakti covers the living entities. That false ego, because he's the master, that is his Shakti, the false ego is his Shakti. And he is the personification of that in the universal form. The innumerable jivas as spiritual particles emanating from the oversoul, this is where expansions of the Supreme Lord, the spiritual expansion, talking about us, the jivas, we're like pencils of rays of effulgence. We're sometimes described as rays emanating from the... Or the rays emanating, it's made up of jivas, right? The effulgence of Krishna, those rays emanating is full of jivas, so effulgence. We're part of that little pencil ray of light, spiritual effulgence. So this spiritual part has no relationship with the mundane world. When they come to know themselves to be the eternal servants of Krishna, we can understand that we're not part of this world. When they know they are the eternal servants of Krishna, they are incorporated into the realm of Vaikuntha. That's our natural situation. But when they desire to lord it over Maya, forgetting their real identity, the egoistic principle, Shambhu, entering it into their entities, makes them identify themselves as separate enjoyers of mundane entities. Hence, Shambhu is the primary principle of the egoistic mundane universe and of perverted egotism in jivas that identifies itself with their limited material bodies. So here, when we want to serve Krishna, we understand our position as eternal servants of Krishna, then we can enter into this spiritual realm in a natural constitution. But when we want to enjoy Maya, then Lord Shiva gives his false ego Shakti to cover the living entity. And that false ego is a dictation. I am the Lord and I am the enjoyer. Because after all, that's what we want when we come into this material world. These two things, to be the Lord, the enjoyer, this has been with us since time immemorial, since we entered the universe. We carry it with us throughout all the 84 lakh species of life. These two principles are very prominent, that we are the controllers and we are the enjoyers. And the proof is, today, we are thinking we are the controllers and the enjoyers. So this has been prominent throughout all the different changes of the bodies. We still keep this two feet. So this is the egoistic principle. It's a dictation from Shankarshan. You are the controller, you are the enjoyer. Very subtle. Shankarshan is sitting in the heart and he's dictating. Enjoy. You can control this so you can enjoy it. So it's his dictation. Shankarshan is the worshipful deity of Lord Shiva. So same, that's why Shankarshan looks after the mode of ignorance. So, this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. It works on the same principle, but pervertedly. So, how we become ensnared in this world of Maya, by desiring to enjoy it, this through Maya, the objects of this material world, through the false ego principle, then we can actually enjoy it, because without the help of Lord Shiva we can't enjoy it, because Maya is his energy. So to enjoy his energy you have to have the proper consciousness. So he bestows upon you the proper consciousness, that is Ahankara. You're the Lord and enjoyer, of course. So he gives you that, that's his Shakti, otherwise you can't enjoy the material world. He's the Lord of this world. So he bestows that upon the living entity when the living entity desires to enjoy. In the beginning of creation, just before everything's really happening, the modes of material nature are not manifest, so everything is actually the state of pure goodness. So the jivas are there, just prior to the creation. So it's pure goodness. Vasudeva consciousness, they're actually pure at that time. Then the Ahankara makes its appearance. From that pure situation, you can go back to Godhead if you want, because you're in a pure position. Then the Ahankara, and this is the first principle that happens in the creation. The Ahankara makes its appearance. That Ahankara is telling, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller and enjoyer. And the jiva says, oh, that's what I wanted. Oh, that's what I wanted. So that's what you want. Okay, so now you're ready. So then he gives his Shakti to you. So now you can enjoy. Otherwise you can't enjoy the material world. So Lord Shiva endows you with his potency. Then you can identify yourself as the controller and enjoyer of the material world, which is an illusion. But we see the same principle is there for the spiritual nature also. We want to get back to the spiritual world. So it's also said here. Yeah, this is in the purple too. Advaita Machuta Manadim Nandrupam Madhyam Parandrupasham. In this purport, the translator has said, the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Brahma Samhita, someone said it may have been one of his disciples, but Bhakti Siddhanta read it and authorized it. Or it may have been Bhakti Siddhanta. He's got his name in the front there. But he says, now the jiva, he wants to realize his identity and go back to Godhead. He said the limited intellectual function of the jiva is always contaminated by the influence of time and space and is therefore not in a position to shake off this limitedness. If the potency of the cognitive function does not extend to the realization of the transcendental, what else can? Your cognitive principles, sat chit ananda, chit, you are conscious, sandini sambhit analadini, these potencies. So this sambhit, this chit potency, you're cognizant, your awareness. If that can't understand what is spiritual, then what else can? The senses are not going to do it. The mind is finer than, so that can't reach it. The intelligence also can't reach transcendence. Well, then what else can? So the consciousness, he said, if the consciousness can't reach it, what else can? So the consciousness is that when it's pure, the consciousness can actually reach. So Brahma in reply says that the transcendental absolute is beyond the reach of the Vedas. The Vedas originate in sound, and sound originates in the mundane ether. So the Vedas cannot present before us a direct view of the transcendental world, Goloka. It is only when the Vedas are imbued with the chit potency that they are enabled to deal with the transcendental. This can be also meant to take when the Vedas, only when they're imbued with the chit potency, then they can reveal. Goloka means that when a self-realized person who's in that potency explains the Vedas, then they can reach. Otherwise, without the help of a self-realized person, the Vedas can't reveal. It is only when but Goloka reveals itself to every jiva soul when he is under the influence of the spiritual cognitive potency joined to the essence of the ecstatic energy. This means the Haladini potency. So when you can realize your chit existence, your conscious, your pure consciousness, chit, samvit aspect, that is your consciousness. When you realize that, that means self-realization. Brahma, Buddha, Prasadana. Now that is still not sufficient. Has to be connected also with the Haladini Shakti together. So your pure consciousness with the Haladini Shakti, that can attract Krishna. It actually, this ecstatic function of devotion, this means bhakti actually, the chit function and Haladini. So now you're pure, now how are you going to act in that pure state? Oh, in the pleasure giving potency, giving pleasure to Krishna. So that is bhakti. So it says that this function of devotion is boundless and is surcharged with unalloyed transcendental knowledge. That knowledge reveals Goloka Tattva, the principle of the highest transcendental, in unison with devotion, without asserting itself separately but as a subsidiary to unalloyed devotion. In other words, we can't understand Goloka by knowledge, the transcendental world with knowledge. But when the chit, our chit function, our consciousness joined with the Haladini Shakti or the Bhakti Shakti acts in a way to please Krishna, that is bhakti. And the knowledge of Goloka is revealed from bhakti, it's not revealed from knowledge. It's a different kind of knowledge, there's two knowledge. There's the knowledge in the mode of goodness which reveals, can reveal up to transcendence, because you can come to Sudarshan. And there's, in bhakti, it has its own classification of knowledge. Because Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, give up your knowledge. So what kind of knowledge? No, that's your mundane knowledge. That's your knowledge in the mode of goodness, which is enlightening, which is revealing, Krishna says. But ultimately you've got to give up that knowledge. And attain to the stage of bhakti, giving Krishna pleasure. And that bhakti, that reveals. Bhakti has its own knowledge, so that will reveal Goloka. That will reveal the spiritual world. So, the next question is, how do we join the cognitive function to the Haladini function? Because we have a little bit, we are Satchitananda, but small portion. Krishna is unlimited. So our chit and Haladini function is actually not powerful enough to take us to Krishna. So, it says here and also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is describing these different potencies and the Haladini potency. Adilila, chapter 4, text 68. Purple. And he says the product of Haladini Shakti is love of Godhead, which has two divisions, pure and adulterated. It's only when the Haladini Shakti emanates from Sri Krishna and is bestowed upon the living entity, upon the living being, to attract him, to attract Krishna, then does the living entity become a pure lover of God. So, only when the Hiladini emanates from Krishna. So we have a little bit. We're trying to reach Krishna with our cognitive function and our pleasure-seeking aspect that we have, Anandamaya Paisha. That is the Hiladini potency, but it's misused. Trying to seek pleasure in the material world. When it's properly used, in its right perspective, how to please Krishna with our Hiladini? That is the pleasure potency. How to give pleasure to Krishna instead of giving pleasure to myself. How we can give pleasure to Krishna? This is the proper function of the Hiladini Shakti. When it's like that, still it's not powerful enough to reach Krishna. But it can attract the attention of Krishna's devotees. That a person has come to this position and he's trying. So those devotees already have, who are in this Hiladini potency. The spiritual world Goloka is functioning within this potency. Hiladini potency is the main thing. Everything is moving and working to please Krishna. The grass, the trees, Jamuna, everything. It's all, everything it's doing is to please Krishna. The whole atmosphere there is like an atmosphere of Hiladini potency, Shakti. That's what's there. So, a person who's in that potency is imbued with, endued with that same quality of Hiladini potency, which Radharani embodies the full, and all of her, she expands in Anandamaya, that verse in Brahma Samhita, she expands. Hundreds of millions of gopis, they're all Hiladini Shakti. And so there are hundreds of all these devotees. So a devotee who has that potency, like our great acharyas, they're also within that potency. So they can give. Or they can recommend. Because they can recognize. So when the jiva actually comes to his proper senses and starts to use his proper cognitive function in pleasing Krishna, that's what I'm supposed to be doing with myself. This is proper use and awakening of his chit function. Now let me use his potency for pleasure, my pleasure-seeking tendency for Krishna's pleasure. Then he is situated perfectly. Then he attracts the attention of devotees who have that potency. And they advise, or they recommend to Krishna, here is someone coming, he wants to serve you. So then Krishna, with his unlimited Hiladini Shakti, he reaches out a little bit of Hiladini Shakti, because we're not powerful enough to reach Krishna. So Krishna sends his Hiladini Shakti, and that is called pure love of Godhead. Then that ecstatic function of bhakti begins, and then the relationship is there. So because Krishna sends his Hiladini Shakti, then he becomes attracted. He's not attracted when it's that Hiladini Shakti is not there. When it's there on the living entity, Krishna becomes attracted. What is he becoming attracted to? The Hiladini Shakti. It's not the living entity. The living entity is allowed to use this Hiladini Shakti. But Krishna's actually attracted to the Hiladini potency. And you're allowed to use it in your unlimited varieties of ways that every living entity is different. You can use it to serve Krishna how you like. You are given permission. But it's that Hiladini potency that is attracting Krishna, because that's his greatest attraction, because that's Srimati Radharani. Krishna's attracted to Srimati Radharani. So when he's attracted to Hiladini Shakti, what is happening? Krishna's attracted to Radha. That potency being none different than the possessor of the potency. So that's what's happening in the spiritual world. It's only Radha and Krishna's enjoyment. So the same thing reflected in the material world. Now we want to enjoy the material world. So we can't do it. We're not even powerful enough to enjoy the material world unless we're empowered to do it. So then Lord Shiva gives his false ego, Shakti. Then we can start to enjoy Maya. because Maya now is attracted as a false ego, and the Maya and Maya is there. So what is a false ego? This is Shiva Shakti. Again, it's non-different than Lord Shiva, being an emanation from him. So what happens when we want to take Krishna's place? Krishna's the enjoyer of the Ladini potency. Now we want to take Krishna's place. So Lord Shiva gives us the potency to do it, and then we can enjoy Maya. So this is what's happening. The false ego is touching Maya, and the experience, the jiva is identifying experience as his experience. It's not his. It's not him. It's the false ego contacting Maya. Same principle. All that's happening here is Lord Shiva is consorting with Durga Devi, Parvati. That's all that's happening. And in the spiritual world, the only thing that's happening is Radha and Krishna consorting together. We're able to take part in that and experience it. But in fact, that's all. Agliya Krishna, Aya Sattva Vidya, that Krishna is the only master, the only enjoyer. So he's not only enjoying directly, he also enjoys indirectly with Radharani, through all the living entities who come to him, through that Haladini potency. And similarly, Lord Shiva, the living entity with the false ego of Lord Shiva, then he thinks he can enjoy Maya. Who can touch Maya? Who can touch Parvati Devi? She's known as Sati, she will read later on. She's such the most chaste woman in the universe. And we've got this Purusha Bhav, whether in a male body or a female body, everybody has this Purusha Bhav. And this energy, this female energy, is mine to enjoy. In other words, I'm the enjoyer of Parvati. This material world is Parvati. But how can that be? How can we enjoy Parvati, the most chaste woman in the universe? It's the Hankara that's touching Parvati. And that's not Shiva. We're not enjoying. Lord Shiva's enjoying Parvati. We get allowed to experience that. So similarly, we can also experience Radha and Krishna. The other way around. We get endowed with the Haladini potency, the Krishna's pleasure-giving potency, and Krishna's attracted to the all. So then the relationship begins. Then pure devotion begins. Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya-mṛta, in the introduction, what is Radha and Krishna? He says Radha and Krishna is the exchange of love. Not only with Radha and Krishna, but with all the unlimited other servants of Krishna who serve him. That exchange of love is Radha and Krishna. Because what's happening is Krishna is contacting the Haladini Shakti. Prabhupada says, if you don't believe me, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the last chapter, last sloka, last purport, last verse, last sentence, who knows what Prabhupada says? All you Gita studiers, Chamashri Mataji. Yes, Prabhupada finishes Bhagavad Gita on this point, that the living entity, bound up in misidentification in the material world. The idea is he gets free from this. Again, he resumes his normal position in the pleasure-giving potency. This is where Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, as it is, wants to take us back into the spiritual world, giving Krishna pleasures. He says he resumes his original normal function in the pleasure-giving potency in Haladini Shakti, in the atmosphere where everybody is serving Krishna. So this is where Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita wants to take the readers. Did I teach you that in your Gita study course? That's a complete, you can understand the author's intention, the last thing he says. That's where Prabhupada wants to take us. Anyway, this is the mystic display of Lord Shiva's energies. How Krishna can do everything so nicely that everybody's satisfied. We're quite satisfied. I think we're enjoying spiritually or we're enjoying materially. Krishna's satisfying everyone, but then he's very expert, but he's enjoying. He's the only enjoyer. Nagliya Krishna Ashanta Vidya. Everyone else is servant, Krishna is the only master and enjoyer. So in this way, Lord Shiva, very wonderful character, we're chanting the glories of Lord Shiva. We're sitting in Rudra Deep. This is the island of Rudra Deep, Lord Shiva. So. You've seen the picture of Lord Shiva in the temple. He's drinking the ocean of poison. So, who can drink an ocean of poison? And what is it that counteracts poison? Nectar. Nectar. So when Lord Shiva drank that ocean of poison, no one could survive that. He had some nectar to counteract it. You know what that nectar was? Huh? Ananta Samhita Haribol. It was the Ananta. He went to see Lord Ananta, and Ananta spoke the Ananta Samhita. The Ananta Samhita is nothing but glory, or partly is glorification of Navadvipa Dham, Lord Chaitanya, pastimes of Gauranga, the glory of his munificent incarnations and missions. So Lord Shiva kept this in his throat, the nectar from the of Navadvipa and Gauranga in his throat. And even the whole ocean of poison couldn't affect him. He said the glory of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. We think it's bad, but it's not a whole ocean of poison. Lord Shiva, by the Sankirtan, keeping the Sankirtan message in his throat, he counteracted that whole ocean of poison. And he says, and because of this, I feel I've become freed from my great sin of preaching Mayavad philosophy. Because Adi Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva also. So he says, now I feel relieved and I've become free from that. Of course, Shankaracharya, in the Jaiva Dhamma, the question is asked, what about Shankaracharya? Mayavad. Shankya Vashya. Devotees are scared. They shiver in fear when they hear his name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sripad Shankaracharya, we pay our, or with the character in the Jaiva Dhamma, we pay our prostrated Astanda Dandavat Pranam at his lotus feet. He said, why master? He's a big Mayavadi. He's brought Mayavadi into the world. Why we should do that? He said, no. He said, he kicked out Buddhism. By this philosophy, he got rid of Buddhism. He said, who could do that? That was an incarnation of the Lord, Buddha. He's established this nirvana, this void philosophy. Who can defeat him? You got nothing to defeat him with. you got nothing to deal with in that philosophy. Everything is void. So who could defeat him? A Vishnu incarnation presenting a philosophy. Who could? So only a Vaishnava, a great Vaishnava could do that. Who is the greatest Vaishnava? Vaishnava Jataha Shambhu. So he could do it. He said, otherwise, if he had not done that, Lord Shiva had not done that in the form of Shankaracharya, he said, even today, we would have had such a problem with this voidist philosophy, this Buddhist philosophy. But because Shankaracharya, he brought it back to the Vedas at least, he brought it back to him. And so he could do that. He was very powerful because he's the Ahankara principle. So it's quite easy for Lord Shankaracharya, Shiva, to preach and influenced by the Ahankara print, which everybody's covered with and everybody likes anyway. So when he blows that up, no, you are God. You are God. And I am. So God is something and you are that God. Well, that's better than being nothing, right? Better than being a Buddhist. If I'm God, it's much better than being nothing. So, we choose his philosophy. So they all left Buddhism. So he tricked them. Yeah, otherwise we still have all this voidist philosophy. It would be very difficult to get rid of. But he did a great service to the Vaishnava community. So he stays here in Navadvipa Dham, so many forms. so many forms and doing different pastimes and leelas. And he's known as Ketrapol. He guards the Dham. He's the guardian of the Dham. And one of the ways they do it, he presents in Vidyanaga, at the place of learning. Everything comes from Vidyanaga. All the six systems of philosophy come from there. The Vedas, Veda Vyas wrote the Vedas there. Pantanjali system, Kannada logic system. Everything comes, all the systems of knowledge come from Vidyanaga. Because at the time of the dissolution of the universe, Matsya comes and he saves the Vedas. Otherwise everything is lost. So he keeps the Vedas on his back. Then everything is water. It's the whole devastation of water. So Matsya is swimming around. Then a beautiful lotus is there in the distance. You know what that lotus is? Shimai Padam Ki, Nabdi Tam Ki, Jai. So he swims over and they take the load, the Vedas off, and they put it in Vidyanaga. Then everything starts again. Then everybody comes and gets their philosophies and speaks their philosophy. So he's there along with Parvati, and they teach the Tantric Shastras. Lord Shiva is famous for speaking the Tantra Shastras. So they deal, the Tantra Shastras, that deals with many, many cities. With magic, you can get many, many material perfections, cities here, by Tantric. You say a mantra, after you practice and you got your city, you get anything, magic. So, there are many people who are not devotees here. And so, to keep them occupied so they don't interfere with the devotees and devotional service and the study of Bhagavatam, Lord Shiva gives them all these tantras with all promises of all nice things and siddhis and powerful things they can get. And they're so overwhelmed. That stupid Vaishnava, they're simply Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Look what we can get in our tantric shastras, you know. So they're always busy in the chant, and there's so many rules and regulations and ritual there whole day long, doing all the rituals. This way they leave the Vaishnavas alone. So Lord Shiva is tricking them. This way he protects the Dham. They don't actually try to enter into the bhakti aspect of it and pollute it. He keeps them busy in one little place so they can be involved in their, in doing all their tantras and everything. And this way he protects the purity of the bhakti of Navadvipa Dham, so the non-devotees, they don't have entrance. Any comment or question?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for such a wonderful class. Prabhuji, from this shloka, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma, Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param, I'm thinking, after hearing your class, that first Lord Shiva has to withdraw this false ego potency of his, only after which an intimate associate of Krishna can give us the internal potency. So, can we pray to Lord Shiva for him to withdraw this? I mean, my thinking is correct to begin?
Your thinking is absolutely correct. And the example is right here in Rudradweep. It's given in the Nabadi Bhava Taranga. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the Prikram of Nabadweep, and this is the final island in the sequence of Prikram, Rudradweep. So he meets Lord Shiva here in Rudradweep. Lord Shiva is dancing. Jai Satchinandan, Jai Satchinandan, give all living entities your mercy, give everyone your mercy, Jai Satchinandan, give your mercy to everyone. He's falling over and he's crying and completely ecstatic. Then he sees Bhaktivinoda Thakur is there, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur pays his obeisances and begs his mercy. And then he says, yes! He said, by my instruction, by my potency, by my power, Maya will flee. Maya is his wife. He's the only one who can order Maya to go. No one else can. Devi Yeshi Gunima Mama Maya to it. You cannot. You cannot move Maya 1 inch. Lord Shiva, go! She goes. She has to listen to her husband. So he says that, yeah. Maya will retreat. So he orders Maya, he can order Maya to retreat. This is a great devotee of Gauranga. He wants to say, okay, Maya, you leave him alone now? She's retreat, and he says, yes. And as Vaishnava Shambho, okay, by my, that's mukti, right? He's got released from that false ego. By my mercy, you will soon achieve your spiritual perfection. Bhaktivinoda Thakur looks over there, Pulinda, that's bank of the Ganga there, that's Adi Navadvipa. What does he say? Radha and Krishna, billions of gopis doing a rasa dance. Faints on the floor. Wakes up and he's got spiritual body. His eye, Kamala Manjari. He's got a spiritual body. His guru is there, Ananga Manjari. Haladini Shakti, you see? Haladini Shakti there. So he gets his body, that is the Haladini Shakti body. That is, he's serving the Haladini potency. Then take him to meet Rupa Manjari, Rupa Goswami, Haladini potency. Their expansions of Srimad Radharani. Yeah, so you get rid of the old body, you get a new body. You get rid of the false ego body and you get the Haladini body. How it's done. Guru Mukha Padma Bhakka Chiteti Kori Ayakka. You surrender your mind, body and words to serving Guru. You become one with Guru. Your body, mind, words, everything become one with Guru. In other words, you give your body to Guru, with Guru, then he makes your body one with the Ladini potency. When he sees that you are sincerely surrendered your body, mind and words to executing his orders, your body has become his. So then he gives you a spiritual body, Haladini. He recommends to Krishna, then Krishna can. The service is going on through this Haladini potency. Yeah. It all happened here, in right here, in this island. Not so far away. You don't even have to get a rickshaw, you can.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Just a walk away from your spiritual body, right? No need rickshaw fare.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, thank you for such a nice class, Prabhuji. Thank you for such a nice class. Prabhuji, you were saying that we should give up chit potency, not...
Give up?
Chit potency. We should, after coming to chit potency, then we go to Ahala.
No, we don't give it up. Oh no. That's eternal. Chit potency is eternal. That is your consciousness. If you don't have chit, you're unconscious. Satchit Ananda, Sambit Sandini and Haladini, eternal potencies. My new quantity here.
You were also saying, at one point you were saying that we give up mode of goodness to enter bhakti.
Yes.
And also we see that...
You give up mode of goodness to get bhakti, because bhakti you cannot get by the modes of material nature, it's beyond, it's transcendental. You don't give up the mode of goodness prematurely. Oh, I don't need the mode of goodness. You cultivate it. It's helpful. Practically, the idea of the mode of goodness, cultivation of all good qualities in the mode of goodness, is a preparation that when a pure devotee comes, you're able to receive him. This is the benefit of being in the mode of goodness. If you're in the mode of passion and ignorance, you may not benefit a pure devotee in his presence. But if you're in the mode of goodness, you're much more susceptible to pick up that transcendental vibration and therefore take shelter and instruction from that person. So this is the benefit of all the activities in the mode of goodness that we do, to purify ourselves, to become reciprocant, become receptacle, become whatever the word is, to that pure devotee. Then we can serve him and we can, then you can transcend the mode of material nature. But don't, oh no, we don't need the modes of material nature, it's in, therefore I'll give it up. Wait until you...
So my question is that as you were saying just now, this qualities in mode of goodness, they are stepping stones.
What? Stepping stones?
Qualities in mode of goodness, they help us to go to bhakti. Yeah. So my question is that these qualities in mode of goodness, because Prabhupada has given us Brahmanical culture also, so do we accept it as one of the principles of devotional service, or do we accept it as stepping stone for devotional service?
It's the same thing. It's the principle of devotional service or a stepping stone. It's bhakti is given by a bhakta. It's not got from gaining material knowledge or anything else. But our lifestyle is dictated in the mode of goodness, because we're in a conditioned state, so we need something we can work with. So okay, then deal with the mode of goodness. It's much more conducive. All these things are given by Rupa Goswami, who's allowed any potency. Rupa Goswami is Haladini Shakti, an expansion of Radharani. She's coming here and she's given you a process of sadhana bhakti, which can't get you Krishna. You can only get Krishna by spontaneous outpouring of the heart for Krishna, spontaneous loving service. not by Vedi Sadhana Bhakti. But because we haven't got that, we've lost our loving attraction for Krishna. Next best thing, then Rupa Goswami has given us a process. Sadhana Bhakti, Vedi Sadhana Bhakti. So Srimad Bhagavatam says you should accept the means of self-realization, but it's also you should learn how to give it up. When you've achieved the goal, you shouldn't be attached to the ritual. You should give it up when you've reached the goal. So similarly, sadhana bhakti, we say the mean bhakti, the means and the end are the same. Now we're doing bhakti, when we get back to the spiritual world, we do bhakti. But this is sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is in Vaikuntha, it's not in Goloka. So our goal is Goloka. So we're doing sadhana bhakti, the means and the end are the same. But that sadhana, when we mature, it transforms into Raghunuga. So it's still bhakti, but that gets you into. So that you get from a bhakta. And a bhakta says, get up early in the morning, take 3 baths, put your tilak, chant your gayatris, attend artics. It's all sadhana bhakti. This is what the devotees, because this is all we can do. We have forgotten our spontaneous attraction for Krishna. So therefore we follow the path of the acharyas.
Since we're discussing Lord Shiva today, I want to ask, today is Ganesh Puja, and I want to ask some details, what is our connection as Vaishnavas with Ganesh?
With
Lord
Ganesh?
Yeah, because we are supposed to keep him on the entrance of our door or in the entrance of the altar. So what is our, today what should be our feeling towards Lord Ganesh and our connection?
Well, you can wish him a happy New Year, Bengali New Year. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, see, in traditional families, they've been worshipping all these gods for generations. Then someone becomes a Krishna Bhakta, and they say, okay, we can take all the demigods off the altar, take everyone off Ganesh, Shivji, like there. And the family, oh my God, you know, we've worshipped this for generation after generation, you know, the thunderbolts are going to start flying and everything like that. So they can't, you know, they don't work it out. It's so common in South India, especially. So what to do? You can't upset the whole family lineage because you've become a devotee and now the whole family's got to change because you don't want to see any demigods anymore, anything like that. Anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, keep the peace and keep everyone's sanctity. He said there is a form of Vikshakshina. He's an associate of Lord Vishnu. He has an elephant face. Vikshakshina. He says, so when you do your puja, your Ganesh puja, you meditate on that Vaikuntha dude. So the family think, oh look, he's nice, he's worshipping Ganesh, he's following family tradition, nice boy. So nobody gets upset. But your consciousness, he is worshipping a Vishnu form of that Ganesh. From that form, he empowers Ganesh also. The form of Lord Nrisimhadev also is mentioned in Brahma Samhita. By his potency, he empowers Ganesh. So Ganesh, he removes obstacles, so everybody has to worship Ganesh before they do any kind of puja. It's always recommended in all the Vedas, you have to do Ganesh puja. You offer a little bit of gold, a little betel nut, something, pan leaf. You do your little Ganesh puja. And so what do we do in the Gaudiya Sampradaya? We're worshipping, and we don't see Ganesh on the altar, but every time you do puja, Ganesh should be worshipped. So what's our situation? So the Gaudiyas have another interpretation. Interpretation is allowed. We just read here in this purport. They were interpreted to a different meaning. Anyway, the interpretation of Ganesh. Gana, Isha. Gana means person. And Isha means topmost. Who is that topmost person? For us, Guru. Krishna is the supreme person. The topmost person, that is Guru. So Guru is our Gana, Isha. So before we start worshipping, we worship Guru. That's our Ganesh puja. He likes ladus. He got big belly. It depends on motivation also, but you have to see things in proper perspective. If you don't know what to do, then find out what to do. Gopal Bhatta Goswami says in his Sakriya Sarutipika, the introduction, that a devotee who is initiated into a Vaishnava Sampradaya, into the holy names of Vishnu, if he worships the demigods, even he forgets, even if he gets about it, or whatever he does, somehow or another he worships the demigods. He commits nama-aparad and seva-aparad if he worships any of the demigods.
Because we were told like this from the beginning of our spiritual life, that Ganesh should be in the entrance of the altar. and when we start the puja there is some, and to ask for removal of the obstacles. Even so many great personalities who were Krishna themselves or his associates were entering the demigods' temples and asking for some sort of help. Like Rukmini Devi, she worshipped the demigods to get Krishna.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Doing proper consciousness. You could do it in proper consciousness. You understand what you're doing, it's okay. It has to be done in proper consciousness. The example is the gopis, they worship Katyayani, Rukmini, these are all, but they wanted to for Krishna. But if you think that I have to worship this demigod because if I don't, this is according to the rules, and if I don't, then the ceiling is going to fall in and the whole dynasty will be wiped out. If you have all these kind of ritualistic fears, then you better worship. But that should all be cleared before you understand what you're doing when you take initiation into the Vishnu mantra. Understand your relationship with the demigods. Brahma Samhita says, Chaiva Durga verse, that the way to worship Devi, the proper date Devi, is to become a devotee of Govinda. This is real Durga Puja. When you worship Govinda, you become free from her clutches. That person who is binding you up in this material world, she has a thankless task, Prabhupada says. She doesn't want to do it. But when you worship Govinda, she's so happy. Oh, at last, I don't have to keep him bound up with, in this material world with my three miseries. He's going back to Godhead. So that very person who binds you up here, a person who becomes a devotee, she clears the way for you to go back to Godhead. She's the mother of the universe. She says, all you 33 sons of mine, children of mine, because I'm the mother, they get out of the way. He's coming back. She assists you through the universe, because it's her realm. And she actually helps you to go back to, back to Godhead. If there is material motivation behind your worship, that you should be very, very careful. It could be dangerous if you're a devotee, initiated devotee. If there's no material motivation, but simply for service. Okay. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Vidaya Gaura Premanandini.